Pennsylvania,
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania.
Peace tone of democracy.
I love your families and here. I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
Again, we present Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy, an historical dramatization of the part our great state of Pennsylvania plays in the life and success of these 48 United States. This program is prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense in order to acquaint you better with the glorious history of our great Commonwealth. Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where I roam, you will always be home sweet home to me, Pennsylvania, my home.
Don't give up the ship.
Pennsylvania is famous for the spirit of those words, don't give up the ship. And that's our story. The thrilling tale of Captain Dobbins and Captain Perry, the Niagara, the Battle of the Great Lakes, and the role that Erie and Pennsylvania played to help win the War of 1812. After the Revolutionary War, the Great Lakes formed the natural barrier between our new republic and the territory the mother country, Great Britain, succeeded in retaining. But early in the 1800s, trouble was brewing over control of this Northwest Territory, as it was called. In the battles that grew out of the conflict, Captain Daniel Dobbins, a native Pennsylvanian born near Lewistown, was captured by the enemy with the fall of Detroit. Making his escape, he found his way to Presque Isle, now Erie. There he was ordered by General David Meade, another heroic Pennsylvanian, to report the disaster to Washington. It is early September 1812. Captain Dobbins is talking to President Madison and his war cabinet.
Gentlemen, I bring you news of a great disaster. General Hull has surrendered at Detroit, Fort Dearborn has fallen, and its garrison has been massacred by Indians. The whole Northwest is lost unless we can win control of the Great Lakes.
How can this be accomplished, Captain Dobbins?
By establishing a freshwater navy on Lake Erie. It would protect our Great Lakes territory.
That suggestion, if I recall correctly, Captain Dobbins, was placed before the cabinet previously.
Yes, Mr. President. And the recommendation is and always will be absurd. Why should we risk protecting that great empty wilderness? It's our Atlantic coast only that needs protection.
Mr. President and members of the cabinet.
Think, gentlemen, think. Without the control of this great inland sea, the whole Mississippi Valley will be in danger. It will be encircled by the enemy. Louisiana Purchase will mean nothing to us. We shall be unable to expand westward unhindered, and in fact might even lose some of the territory only so recently secured.
Gentlemen,
I agree with Captain Dobbins. I recommend that we organize a freshwater navy to meet the enemy threat on Lake Erie.
And if you'll pardon my saying so, gentlemen, if we don't do something, and do it quickly, it will be too late.
I disagree, and I object. I see no reason to become alarmed at this so-called backwoods inland water threat to our security and expansion, and I recommend that we dismiss this matter entirely.
Let us have done with discussion. Captain Dobbins is right. There is only one thing to do. We must eliminate the Great Lakes as a base of operations against us by the enemy. We must establish our own fleet on Lake Erie.
And Mr. President, I recommend that Captain Dobbins be commissioned a sailing master in the United States Navy and sent back to Presque Isle to begin the construction of a fleet. And that the sum of $2,000 to start work on the project be placed at his disposal immediately.
Well, about this matter of expense, Captain Dobbins, naturally it is not a question of money that shall prevent our safeguarding our Northwest frontier interests.
Mr. President, the expense of the construction of a fleet should be our smallest problem. I know that part of western Pennsylvania well. Timber is cheap and plentiful at Erie. Why, giant oak trees can be had for as little as $1 apiece, and I myself will offer to chop down the first tree.
And so Captain Dobbins became responsible for the building of the fleet at Erie, then a frontier town, with a magnificent sum of $2,000 placed at his disposal through Rufus Reed, local merchant and banker. On the way, he traveled through New York, Albany, and Buffalo, hoping to pick up some carpenters to take along with him. But in this, he was only partly successful, as good skilled labor was hard to get. In the face of great difficulties, Dobbins drew rough plans for the vessels, himself felled the first tree, hewed out the keel of the Niagara, and began the building of a fleet in the autumn of 1812. When Noah Brown and 25 skilled carpenters arrived to help out in March 1813, they soon discovered what was holding up the job of getting the ship built.
Captain Dobbins, I'm Noah Brown, a shipbuilder from New York, and these men I brought with me are the finest carpenters I could get.
I'm glad you've come, Brown. We need your help badly. It's not only the men I need, but...
But what, Captain Dobbins?
Can you build a ship without iron, oakum, and pitch, tools, or rope?
You mean that you...
I mean that unless we get more iron and tools, why, soon there won't be anything for your men to do.
But isn't the government sending materials through from Pittsburgh?
Not with the roads as bad as they are now, Brown. Why, it's March. It's impossible to bring anything in a wagon from Pittsburgh until late spring, and, hell, it's through wild country at best.
How about grub? Well, they know already that there ain't much to speak of, and what there is ain't so good.
Well, last week we raided an enemy ship fast in the ice out in the lake and found 20 barrels of pork in her and stripped her of all the iron we could find.
That pork ain't gonna last forever, and we can't eat iron, you know.
Well, those not satisfied with the provisions can go out and see what they can bring back.
You'll soon learn, strangers. I've been here all winter and often scoured the country for cattle and food for 4 and 5 days at a time. Why, it's lucky neither. You'll soon stop grumbling about grub when you find out how tough it is to get.
My men will be satisfied, all right, Captain Dobbins. We'll make the best of everything.
And they did make the best of everything. They worked hard in order to finish the boats before the enemy should attack. But it wasn't until the end of July, before the boats were completely fitted, at a cost of a little over $19,000, and ready for action. Carronades had been wagoned and boated from Washington. Powder came overland from the Delaware by Conestoga wagon. Almost superhuman obstacles were overcome. In March, Captain Oliver Hazard Perry came on the scene. Born at South Kingston, Rhode Island, Oliver Perry was now 26 years old when assigned by the Navy Department to service on the Great Lakes. Before making the perilous trip to Erie, he had been 12 years before the mast as midshipman, lieutenant, captain, and post commandant. Just prior to his departure, had charge of a flotilla of 17 gunboats in the harbor of Newport. As the rude fleet of 6 vessels was ready in early August to sail out of the entrance of the harbor, new difficulties arose. Captain Perry seeks out Noah Brown.
Mr. Brown, the bar at the entrance of the harbor is only 5 feet deep. Niagara and the Lawrence both draw 9 feet of water. They'll stand up out of the water high and dry and we won't be able to move them. How are we going to get them over?
There's a way, sir. We'll use barges as pontoons. In fact, Captain Dobbins and I are ready for the entire operation.
Good. So be it then.
The enemy! The enemy! All starboard in the harbor!
Captain Perry! Look out, spies the enemy, and the launch is fast in the bar. What can be done? We're lost.
Here, Captain Dobbins, order the fleet drawn up as in line of battle. We'll make it appear as though we're ready for them. Perhaps they don't fancy the encounter just yet. Hurry, hurry, have the boats drawn up in offensive formation.
Aye, aye, sir. Aye,
aye, hurry, hurry,
this clever bit of quick thinking on the part of Captain Perry saved the day. The haziness of the morning deceived the British commander and made it appear as though Perry's whole fleet was ready for action. After hovering around about an hour, the English squadron moved away and left Perry, Brown, and Dobbins to finish their work. But the actual battle to come could not be avoided. The two fleets came together at Put-in Bay on the morning of September 10, 1813. With 9 ships in his command, Captain Perry ordered the crew of his flagship, the Lawrence, on deck as the two fleets approached each other. Mounting a gun, he unfolded the flag with the following words.
My brave lads, the
inscription on this flag is the last words of the gallant Captain Lawrence, after whom this vessel is named. Don't give up the ship. Shall I hoist it?
Yes!
And so the historic battle began. At first, the tide of battle was against the Americans. Throughout the day, the fighting went on, with one boat after another put out of commission, and many men killed and others wounded. By afternoon, the Lawrence was shattered almost to the sinking point. It was then that Perry daringly abandoned the flagship, boarded the Niagara, and directed her into the midst of the enemy squadron. Within an hour, the enemy fleet had hauled down its colors. 80 members of the intrepid crew of the Lawrence had been killed or wounded, and her decks ran red with blood. It was then that Perry dispatched the historic statement to General Harrison.
We have met the enemy, and they are ours. Two ships, two brigs, one schooner, and one sloop.
Now that the lake was in control of the Americans, Captain Perry cooperated with General Harrison to regain Detroit and move against the British land forces. The result was complete control of the northern frontier, all due to Perry's victory.
Out of the mines, the mills, the forests of our own Pennsylvania came the materials that helped spell victory in this early conflict.
Yes, from Pennsylvania, too, came many of the men who built the ships and gave their lives for the freedom that we enjoy today.
What became of the Niagara? Allowed to sink in Misery Bay, there she lay for almost 100 years. In 1913, she was raised and refitted for the centennial celebration of Perry's great victory.
Pennsylvania was indeed the keystone in our national defense during those critical years.
Custody of the Niagara was recently handed over to the Pennsylvania Historical Commission. The restoration of the hull of the vessel has been completed.
Pennsylvania is proud of the Niagara and the great role she played in our country's history. True to the tradition of this famous vessel, the loyal cry of every Pennsylvanian is,
don't give up the ship!
As with the traditionally old, so with the present new, Pennsylvania is today carrying on the fight to preserve this country's rich heritage, to aid the cause of freedom, to win national victory. Today, as always, that is the role of Pennsylvania, keystone of democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, you're the land that I adore. I love your valleys and hills, I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
Next week, we will bring you another thrilling episode showing how Pennsylvania again contributed to the cause of American freedom. Yesterday it was, don't give up the ship. Today it's keep 'em flying. America calling. Remember Pearl Harbor. As always, Pennsylvania is taking a prominent part in the struggle. You can help by your effort in the field, mine, and factory. Keep 'em flying. And tune in again next week to hear Pennsylvania, keystone of democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania. And no matter where I roam, you will always be home, sweet home to me, Pennsylvania.